Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. It's the Midday Health Watch with Dr. Lena Wen, the Health Commissioner of Baltimore City. There's good news for babies in Baltimore. The infant mortality rate is down to record low levels, and there's an effort afoot to help those babies grow into healthy teenagers. We'll look at the ways the city is implementing its youth health and wellness strategy, plus the future of Obamacare. If President-elect Trump makes good on his promise to repeal and replace the ACA, what will that mean for local health departments struggling to address the needs of the uninsured and the underinsured? Even though rates for some plans are rising, is the ACA still a good deal for some people? The Midday Health Watch with Dr. Lena Wen coming right up after these headlines. And good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad that you're joining us for Midday here on 88.1 WYPR. Today, it's Midday Health Watch. It's our monthly conversation with the Baltimore City Health Commissioner, Dr. Lena Wen, who joins me in Studio A. You are very welcome to join us with your questions and comments for Dr. Wen today. For the hour, our phone number, 410-662-8780, our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, if you want to send us a tweet, is @midday. Tom Hall. Lena, it's good to see you. Welcome back.
Thanks very much. Glad to be back on Midday.
Yeah, always glad to have you. So let's talk about the Affordable Care Act and the event that you did a day or two ago. You were targeting in particular college students because it's this age group that are so important for the success of this program.
I would say it's important for every person to have healthcare coverage. Nobody plans to be sick. Nobody thinks about when it is that they're going to be sick and then plan accordingly, right? I mean, that just isn't something that we are able to do or would want to do. And that's why it's so important for people to have healthcare coverage. We know that having access to healthcare also prevents small problems from blossoming into big ones. And in my medical practice, I've seen so many patients who suffered without access to life-saving care, patients who are in a coma from ongoing seizures because they didn't have money to pay for seizure medications. Patients who had long undiagnosed heart problems until it got to the point that they needed quadruple bypass surgery. This is the power of health in preventing small problems from getting out of control. And the best time to start is now. So college students may not always think about themselves as some people who could be sick, but it's not only about illness. It's also about prevention, and it's about keeping healthy, both in terms of physical health as well as mental health.
Obviously, the ACA is going to be a political football yet again when the new Trump administration takes office in January. It was a big part of President-elect Trump's campaign pledge to repeal and replace it. The Republicans have voted some 60 times to repeal it. And of course, under the current administration, that legislation never, you know, made it too far. But there's some speculation that it will make it much further under a Trump administration. Both on a personal and a professional level, what does the election of Donald Trump mean for you? And what do you think the possible ramifications are for healthcare in this country?
You know, I am worried and I'm anxious. I don't think that these are particularly reassuring words, and so I hesitated before saying them. But I have to be honest. You know, on a personal level, my parents and I immigrated to this country when I was 8. We were granted political asylum, and we're here as refugees to escape conditions that were very difficult in China. My father spent years going in and out of jail for political dissident activity in China. And I have been blessed with these most incredible opportunities. I am quite sure that I would not be in my role if my family was not granted the opportunity that we did have. And my sister and I are beneficiaries of the values that this country holds so dear when it comes to diversity, inclusion, embracing of each other's differences, and this generosity of spirit that has characterized my entire American experience. That's why I'm so fortunate to serve the city of Baltimore, because it's the same spirit that we embody in our work in public health, that we embody in our work in the in Baltimore City, where our core commitment is to serving those who are the most vulnerable. And, you know, the people have asked me whether I'm taking all of this a bit too personally. When it comes to issues like Obamacare, for me, it's not a policy issue. It is a deeply personal issue. I've treated thousands of patients whose lives were forever changed because they didn't have access to healthcare. Actually, I was in clinic last week, and I met this woman who was in her 40s who told me about how her life had really spiraled out of control a few years ago. She was experiencing homelessness. She had untreated alcoholism and depression. She also had problems with her blood sugars. She was always in and out of ERs. She didn't have a job. She lost custody of her kids. And then she got access to health insurance through the ACA, through Obamacare. And she was able to get every piece of her life back on track. She got her blood pressure, her blood sugars under control. She got treated for her depression. She got treated for alcoholism. She got a job. She got her kids back. And she was crying on the exam table because she was telling me that she felt like health insurance was her rock. And now she doesn't know what's going to happen to it. And I'm hearing that concern across our city. And I will commit on my part, as our city's doctor, to always provide those safety net services for our residents. It's not an option for us to say that we can't do it, because these are our patients whose lives are at stake. But I also recognize the realities that we are heavily dependent on federal funding. We receive most of our funding from the federal government, and these are funding for HIV care, for tuberculosis control, for emergency preparedness, for access to vital health services, disaster preparedness. And I do worry about where that funding is going to go. I don't think we know yet. And lack of that certainty certainly brings about a level of anxiety and worry. But on my part, I think that of all times, this is the time for us to double down and really focus on what we can do locally. There may be nothing that we can do to change the national landscape by ourselves, but there's a lot that we can do, showing kindness and exemplifying those values that my family was so fortunate and are so fortunate to benefit from. We can show that in our work every day, in how we treat individuals that we meet on the street every day. There are plenty of people who are very concerned about what will happen to themselves and their family's health and well-being. We can be part of that safety net for our entire community.
Dr. Lena Nguyen is the Commissioner of Health in the City of Baltimore. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall on 88.1 WYPR. Let's unpack that a little bit, in that when it comes to the health department of the city of Baltimore, you have a budget of about $13
million. $130 million.
$130 million. Okay.
Unless you know something that I don't.
The cuts haven't been that severe. They haven't been that. I just remembered the number wrong. So $130 million, you have about 1,000 people who work in your department. Is any of that funding tied to the ACA? I mean, or is that a separate bucket of money that you receive from the federal government?
I think the most specific and accurate way of describing it is that we have, so of our $130 million budget, and I know we've talked about this briefly in the past as well, we receive less than 20% of it directly from city general funds. So over 80% comes from state government,
grants
through federal government, exactly. And many of these are pass-throughs from the federal government to the state to us. Many of these are grants that we apply ourselves from the federal government, including last year we received a grant for $8.6 million for reproductive health care and education for our youth. We also just received some major grants for trauma treatment for our community. And we have grants coming for assisting our individuals with HIV, with prevention and treatment. That's all a core part of our work. This is what allows us to deliver the services that our residents need. We don't randomly apply for grants. We determine the need that we have in the city. We're scientists and epidemiologists and public health officials. We look at the need based on what are the major concerns in our city. The number one, two, three killers in our city are heart disease, cancer, stroke, issues that are directly related to health. We also know that there are unprecedented numbers of people dying from overdose, and that addiction then affects every aspect of our city. That's what we focus on. We just don't know. I mean, in the past, certainly with the Obama administration, but in general, with our phenomenal elected leaders from Baltimore City and from Maryland, such as Congressman Cummings and Representative Sarbanes and Senator Mikulski, Senator Cardin, they've been wonderful representative force, and Congressman Ruppersberger here in Baltimore City as well. They've been wonderful at getting us the needed resources so that we can address these core issues that are problems for our city when it comes to numbers and when it comes to what the community is asking for. I just don't know what will come our way with the next administration. But that's why having our voices be heard and speaking about the need that we have and our commitment to keep on providing services to our most vulnerable is so important.
Paul Ryan and others in the Republican Party have said for some time now that Obamacare is unpopular with people, that it's really not. Not only is it a bad strategy, a bad program to address the health needs of Americans, but that it's not popular. The fact that rates, the Department of HHS, just a couple of weeks before the election, released information that indicated that rates for some people under the Affordable Care Act were going to rise, sometimes as much as 20-25%. This became a very important issue in the latter stages of the presidential campaign. What's your take on the fact that there are certain people in certain categories, certain age groups and whatnot, that are going to be experiencing higher rates to pay for their health care, number one? And number two, you have certain companies that are choosing to withdraw from the exchanges. And we've had several here in Maryland who are just simply saying the numbers don't add up. We're not going to offer insurance under the exchanges. How do you parse that out?
I think there are two important aspects to add to the to this conversation. The first is that I don't think anyone would argue, including President Obama himself, that Obamacare is perfect. There are many problems, including with rising rates, that need to be fixed. And there are, I think this is the same thing for any piece of legislation, that if it's aiming in the right direction, we should be looking to fix the parts that are not working rather than throwing everything out. Because when you throw everything out, you encounter things like here in Baltimore City, back in the year 2010, there were 81,000 adults who did not have health insurance. But because of the ACA, the number of adults without health insurance is less than 40,000, which means that there are now more than 40,000 people exactly who have access to life-saving care.
And nationwide, it's some 20 million people who are now insured that weren't before.
Right. And for those of us who have seen, and I've seen this personally, as someone who went through years without health insurance, just the fear that you experience every day of not knowing what's coming, not knowing whether you'll go through bankruptcy because of an accident that's beyond your control, or saving on prescription medications in order to pay for rent. I mean, these are not choices that any of us should have to face. We should not have people getting sick because they don't have insurance. And so the principles of Obamacare, of ensuring that everyone has access to quality, affordable health care, is what we need to focus on first and foremost, and then make tweaks to make that better. But I also want to address one other point, and I think this is the part that's been lost in all the rhetoric about Obamacare being unpopular or popular or whatever. And that point is that the rates are expensive, and healthcare is so expensive because we are investing our resources unwisely. I hope that this is not a partisan issue, but a common sense and scientific one. It is very expensive to address cost when we're talking about an individual who is very ill. And we know that 97% of our healthcare costs go into paying for what happens when someone is in a hospital. And yet less than 20% of what determines how long that person lives and the quality of their life depends on what happens in the hospital. So I'm an ER doctor. I certainly believe in providing excellent acute care if somebody comes in with trauma or heart problems. But we also have to be investing upstream, investing in affordable housing, accessible transportation, quality education, services for our babies and pregnant moms. This is what's actually going to keep us healthy. And we need to come up with a much better system, not just through the ACA reform or not, but in general, we need health system reform so that we are really prioritizing the investment in where it makes the biggest difference. This is cost savings, and frankly, it's the best thing for us to do. When you look at other countries around the world that have much better health statistics than we do and yet spend a lot less, it's because they spend a lot more in social services. And it's these other social services that really will keep us healthy and make us more productive and able to contribute to society.
All right. Well, we can chat a little bit more about this after we take a break. Dr. Lena Wen is Baltimore City's health commissioner. She's my guest on this edition of Midday Health Watch. We're going to take a short break right now. When we come back, we'd like to hear from you. Are you planning to enroll in a new plan under the ACA this season? What does President-elect Trump's vow to repeal and replace Obamacare mean for you? I would love to hear from you if you are currently in the market for health insurance and you're on the exchange and you're looking at your options. You can give us a call at 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle at midday Tom Hall. More with Dr. Lena Wen when we come back after these words.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR, where you're listening to Midday.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Looking ahead to tomorrow, my friend and colleague Nathan Sterner will be here sitting in for me, and he will be talking to the writer Yudhijit Bhattacharjee. He's written a book called The Spy Who Couldn't Spell, a true story about one of the largest thefts of U.S. government secrets in history and the unlikely thief who masterminded it. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins Midday's senior producer Rob Civic right here in Studio A. They'll have a review of the rep stage production of American Hero. That's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you've just joined us today, it's Midday Health Watch. We're spending the hour with Baltimore City Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Wen. We're talking about the issues that impact your health and well-being. You can join our conversation. Our telephone number, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. And our Twitter handle, at Midday Tom Hall. One more thing about the Affordable Care Act before we move on to a very cheery subject having to do with the low rates of infant mortality in Baltimore. Those numbers are getting better, and we want to talk about that in a second. But the challenge of convincing young people, one of the problems with the exchange, even though we're now insuring 20 million more people than we were previously, is that there's not enough healthy people in the exchange, and so it's still weighted towards people who are going to require more services and more medication and more attention. So you were talking to some college kids the other day at College Park. What's the case that you could make to a very healthy 20-year-old or 18-year-old or 22-year-old who may not be insured because maybe her parents aren't insured and she's not able to take advantage of the current part of the ACA, which allows her to be on her parents' health insurance? If she is a young person and needs health insurance, what can you say to her to motivate her to sign up?
This is the issue with the so-called young invincibles, the people who, some of them are young, some of them may not even be young, but will say, well, I've been healthy and I will just take a chance. I hear that a lot. And I'd say three things. The first thing is I would talk about the patients that I've seen in the ER who have come in for accidents. Maybe they don't have a condition that's already been diagnosed, but you can't prevent often an accident from happening to you. Do you want to be saddled with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt going in to add on top of school debt and everything else going into your first job? You can't predict when things will happen. And so that's the purpose of insurance, to prevent something from occurring in the first place. I'd say second, that this is also about keeping healthy. Part of the reason we need health insurance is to think about things like reproductive health and mental health and nutrition and fitness. And participating in the ACA, signing up, is important to take care of yourself, because taking care of yourself also means that you'll be able to care for others around you. There's a third argument too, and I'm not sure if this is one that resonates or not, so you can tell me, and maybe our listeners can tell us as well. There are a lot of young people who are upset after the election last week, and I'm not expressing a political statement, I'm just stating a statement of fact. And when I look at the news, I see many stories about protests and young people who are upset, and one of the things they're upset about is this constant call to repeal Obamacare. Well, part of the reason why there are many who are upset about Obamacare is the rising rates. And there are rising rates in part because young, healthy people are not investing in Obamacare. And so when...
It's this circle, isn't it? This sort of vicious
circle.
That's
right. Because if the only people who are buying into, I mean, insurance is about shared risk. And so if the only people who are in the insurance pool are people who are unhealthy, then the rates are going to increase for everyone. And then young people are going to be priced out of it. And so there are young people who will ask me, what is it that I can do? How can I help our country? How can I help our community? And I have an answer. Certainly voting and being involved is one of them. Another one is sign up for the exchange. Sign up for Obamacare. Sign up for the ACA. Because if you want to show that this is a good program, you should yourself be invested in it. Same thing as if you want other people to vote, you should first vote yourself. This is an investment not just in yourself. It's an investment in your family. It's an investment in your community. And it's an investment in our country. But we'll see whether that egalitarian response to health insurance is something that students and young people will embrace.
And it's just, it's a good thing to be thinking outside of your own head, too. It's a good thing to be thinking that I can take actions that are good for others as well as good for myself. Ben in Frederick, let's go to the phones and welcome you to Midday with Dr. Lena Nguyen. Thanks for your call, Ben.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on your show. So this is a good segue because I am a young adult. I'll be turning 25 in January. I currently have a full-time job. Doesn't pay too much, you know, and I'm on my mother's health insurance for probably another year or so. But my question is kind of a feeling as well. Like, I'm getting very anxious, you know, with the unpredictability of Donald Trump. And, you know, I think a lot of young people like myself just really don't know where to turn to, like, in terms of, you know, resources to learn more about, you know, the problems and obstacles that we may face. I just feel like I don't know where to, you know, plant my feet on the ground. So, and kind of how to navigate all these different policies and procedures and protocols that just keep on, you know, falling in front of me on the road.
So, Ben, you're currently insured through your parents, right? And you'll be able to stay insured with your parents until you're 26, unless the law changes between now and the time you turn 26. Do I have that right?
Correct. And now, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I don't even know what to expect when I turn 26, which is the problem.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Lena Nguyen, none of us are really in a position to be able to say with any surety what things are going to be like when Ben turns 26 in, you know, a year and a few months.
While that may be true, I do have a couple of ideas for Ben in terms of what to do next. So getting insured, if for those of you who are not insured, is important for all the reasons that we talked about, because it illustrates buying into this shared community that we have established. But I have two other ideas. The first is that there are a lot of people who are lost right now. There are a lot of people who feel like the country may be going in a direction that they had not expected, but they're not being specific about what it is that they do want. We don't know yet as to what it is that the Trump administration is going to be offering, but we should have an idea of what are the values that we hold dear and what are those things that we need to be demanding. So, for example, we should be loud and clear that healthcare is a right and not a privilege, that nobody should be priced out of life-saving medications, that prescription drug prices have been rising rapidly, and that is unacceptable to price people out of the ability to take something that will literally prolong and save their life. And so we need to have our voices be heard on specific issues. And so I'd say to Ben and to other young people or activists who are listening, join national movements and have your voices be heard, but be clear about what those issues are and what policy changes we want to keep or to advocate for. The second thing is that there is a lot of work that is going to be done on the local level. Local city and county governments have always been the places where innovation can occur. We do work on the ground. We're on the front lines. We also can champion progressive policies and immediately translate them into services. And so I'd say to Ben and for others, if you are interested in contributing, we at the Baltimore City Health Department would love to have additional volunteers. We would love to also, and we would welcome people to consider a career in local public health and to deliver safety net services on the ground. There is no more important time than now to be involved. And we are carrying that flag every single day.
And Ben, I'm sure there are those opportunities in Frederick where you are as well. And I appreciate your call. Thanks for calling Midday. I want to take another call about health insurance. This is from Mark in Catonsville. Mark, welcome to Midday with Dr. Lena Nguyen.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I am a 63-year-old self-employed person. We were on the open market buying insurance before. We basically had terrible insurance, catastrophic. It ran us between $700 and $800 per month, and in a typical year paid nothing for anything. With the Affordable Care Act, we pay much less, and we get real insurance. Last year, my wife needed an operation, and without the better insurance, it would have at least wiped out all our savings. Probably put us into debt. So it's been a godsend for us, and I don't know what we're going to do if they repeal it.
Well, Mark, thank you for your call. I mean, Dr. Nguyen, Mark's story is very typical of an awful lot of people. I mean, for as unpopular as the law is said to be by some people on the political right, there's certainly any number of people who are delighted to have it.
And people who are dependent on it for their lives and for the future of their families, and many others who are worried for equally personal reasons. We had recently a request to provide mental health and trauma counseling for refugees in the city, including some children who had recently been reunited with their families but who have uncertain futures. And having been there myself, when you're worried about your day-to-day existence and what's going to happen to you, I mean, it's an incredibly traumatic time. And so I don't know that I offer necessarily words of reassurance, but that anxiety, that worry, that concern is something that we can at least channel into kindness and acceptance for each other.
I want to change the subject to a cheery topic, a very cheery topic. The infant mortality rate in the city of Baltimore is now at a record low. That's terrific. Tell us where it was, where it is, and why.
Well, good. Very rarely do we hear infant mortality as a happy, as a cheery topic.
Right. But, it's the laugh riot of infant mortality, ladies and gentlemen. Right.
Although you framed it very well and said that this is about the drop in infant mortality.
If fewer babies are dying. I mean, it's amazing to think that in the 21st century, in a major American city, we would have any infant mortality. I mean, that's amazing on one level. But the fact that we do have a problem with it and the problem's beginning to be addressed is good.
That's right. And I actually think that this story that I'm about to tell you about our infant mortality and the progress that we made is a counter narrative to much of what we are hearing about government can't do good work, or all these people in urban cities are killing each other and urban areas are not growing, but bad things are happening there. I think this is a good story of local government serving as the convener, setting the North Star, and having measurable and tangible objectives and metrics that really are as fair and objective as they can get. So back in 2009, which is not too long ago, this is just 7 years ago now, Baltimore had one of the worst infant mortality rates in the country. And our babies were dying at the same rate as babies born in countries in the midst of civil war. And what's even worse about that, I think the number that I continue to be so jarred by, is the fact that in 2009, A black baby born was 5 times more likely to die in its first year of life than a white baby. I mean, those metrics are shocking.
And we
terrible.
Also heard about life expectancy, too, that a child born in Harlem Park had a life expectancy that was 20 years shorter than a child born in Roland Park. And that's outrageous as well. But in terms of this first year of life, that has begun to turn around.
That's right. In 2009, I'll give you the raw numbers. There were 128 deaths of our babies. 128 deaths. Totally unacceptable. Now, we have worked very hard in the last several years, and not just the health department. The health department was a convener, but we've worked with our partners, including with Family League, Healthcare Access Maryland, with the support of many organizations, including Care First, to start a program called Be More for Healthy Babies. It's a public-private partnership that Mayor Rawlings Blake has really championed. And with over 150 partners, including in hospitals and health systems, faith leaders, neighborhood associations, every group came together with one central goal, which is stopping infant mortality. And as a result of that collaboration, I'm very happy to report that in 2015, our infant mortality rate since 2009, so within 6 years, has decreased by 38% citywide. And specifically, we have reduced that disparity between black and white infant mortality by 50%. And the African-American infant mortality rate is in single digits for the first time ever at 9.7 per 1,000 live births, which is huge. And so just to put that into perspective of how many babies is it saving, 128 deaths in 2009, 73 deaths in 2015, which is still 73 too many. But that's equivalent to about 50 babies saved every year.
50-something fewer, yeah.
And I think that this is a story that more people should be telling. We have had accolades, including from the Surgeon General, from the Pew Trust, saying that this is an example of a successful public health intervention. It's about saving lives. It's about leveling the playing field of inequality. And I think it's a good story.
Sure.
For
now, how have you intervened? What are you doing differently? What are moms and dads doing differently that is resulting in these babies making it through?
The Be More for Healthy Babies strategy, which I should mention, I should call out several members of our team who are instrumental in doing it, Rebecca Dineen, Jenna O'Keefe, who is at the Casey Foundation, and many, we've had support from so many partners in our city. They have spearheaded this collective impact strategy. And the strategy is not about one intervention, although there are several interventions that are particularly effective. One of the interventions is triaging every pregnant woman who is vulnerable to different levels of care. So somebody who needs the most level of care might get a nurse to visit them in their homes. Somebody else may have a social worker. Somebody else may have a community health worker. Strategy also involves employing people from the communities that they serve, because they are the most trusted messengers to talk about safe sleep practices. We did public education campaigns on the ABCs of safe sleep.
So for
alone.
Sudden infant death syndrome.
Exactly. So alone, on their back,
having the babies
in the crib,
on their back, in the crib. You
alone,
know,
no yes. smoking.
Right.
All of these strategies. And to talk about breastfeeding, our home visitors also visit women in their homes and may notice paint that's peeling that may have lead poisoning hazards. And so this is the collective impact work that is being done. And it is effective because it's outreach directly to people in their homes where they are with trusted messengers. And it involves every single partner in our city.
We got to take a little break, and then we're going to come back and take more of your calls and comments. We got all sorts of stuff to talk about with Dr. Lena Nguyen here on the Midday Health Watch. Dr. Nguyen, of course, is the City Health Commissioner here in Baltimore. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, if you care to send us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. I hope you'll stick around. I hope you'll give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR, where you're listening to Midday.
And welcome. Welcome back, everybody. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad that you're with us. It's the Midday Health Watch today on the program with the Baltimore City Health Commissioner, Dr. Lena Nguyen. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle at @MiddayTomHall. We have a few calls. I want to try to get to them soon, but Dr. Nguyen, I do want to ask you about the flu. It's flu season. Obviously, it's probably a pretty good idea, especially for certain people, to get a flu shot if they haven't already. It's certainly not too late nor too early, but what's your take on the flu and your optimism about our ability to ward it off in most cases this season?
Well, as a public health official, I have to say that everyone should get a flu shot unless they absolutely cannot because of allergies or an immune problem or something else. A shot that is painful for 1 second can potentially save you 3 weeks of feeling terrible, not to mention that you can pass on the flu to people around you, including small children and older adults and people with chronic illnesses that may have devastating impacts on them. And so really important to go to get a flu shot. You can do that at your local pharmacy, call your doctor. You can visit us on health.baltimorecity.gov and find out more information about the flu.
Are they getting better at it in terms of identifying the particular strains? Because it seems that the strains change from year to year. Are they getting hipper about, knowing which strain they're going to have to attack and then coming up with the right medication?
It is very hard because the flu is a virus, influenza, that mutates a lot. And so it's hard to predict in advance of people actually getting the flu as to what that vaccine should contain. But even though the vaccine is not 100% effective, it's still going to prevent many people from getting the flu. I do want to point out, though, that most of what will get us that fever, runny nose, coughs, sore throats, just not feeling well, especially in the wintertime, it's not because of the flu. It's because of other viruses, such as those that cause the common cold. And so it's really important, especially coming into winter season, to make sure that we wash our hands with soap and water every single time, and that is the single most important thing that can prevent you from getting ill and from spreading illnesses to other people. But make sure to also get the flu shot, too.
The state health department talks about this week being Get Smart About Antibiotics Week. So they're trying to raise awareness about the importance of knowing our susceptibility to becoming antibiotic resistant in a world that's full of all sorts of bugs and all sorts of antibiotics. But making the match isn't always so easy. So what's your advice about antibiotics?
There's a very practical aspect of antibiotics that I want to offer to everyone. Two things. First is that antibiotics kill bacteria. They do not kill viruses. In the ER, I often have people coming to me who have the flu or who have a virus, and they'll say, I would like an antibiotic. But that antibiotic does nothing for this person. So don't ask for an antibiotic when you have a viral infection. Antibiotics just do not affect viruses at all.
And you can test it. I mean, you can take a sample and know whether it's a virus or a bacterial infection, right?
You can 80% of diagnoses are made just based on the story, the history of illness alone. Testing is often not needed in order to do that. And so I do not want your listeners to go in and ask for a test. What I would encourage people to do is to say that do not go to a doctor to ask for an antibiotic, because very likely what you have is a viral infection and the antibiotic is not going to affect it at all, except for number two. Antibiotics, just like every single medication, antibiotics have side effects. Some of those side effects are quite unpleasant and include having a rash, difficulty breathing. They could include having severe diarrhea and vomiting. There are side effects to every medication that you're taking. So I hear many times people will feel like, oh, I have a runny nose, I have fever, I don't feel well, I want a medication for it to go away. But colds and viruses have to run their course, and taking antibiotics is not the answer.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Jane in Howard County, thank you for calling Midday. You're on the line with Dr. Lena Nguyen, the City Health Commissioner.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to say, so I work for a private attorney in Howard County who's appointed the guardian of properties. We have about 10 to 15 wards in Baltimore City. So I work with your guardianship unit quite closely, and I think that it's absolutely wonderful, the people that you have hired and appointed to handle the personal dealings for these elderly people and those with mental illness are A+. They are top-notch. You can tell that they actually care about the wards and their well-being. And I don't know, specifically Mr. Shaw, Ms. Allen, Ms. Jones, that they're just so wonderful and so great. And I just wanted to give you that compliment. Many times people are quick to complain. So I just wanted you to know that.
Well, Jane, thank you. Appreciate it. And Dr. Lena Nguyen, you got some props from the health department there from a person in Howard County. That's terrific.
And Jane, I just want to say thank you so much because we are... You know, nobody goes into public health, nobody goes into care for older adults unless it's something that is our passion, unless it's something that we deeply, deeply care about. And I'm just so proud of our employees who are working so hard all the time to care for some of our most vulnerable individuals. So I really thank you, and thank you also for your great work and important work.
Catherine, in Baltimore, you've been on the line for a while. I appreciate your patience. Thanks for calling Midday. Welcome to the show.
You're welcome, and thank you for taking my call. This is such a great, timely topic, and Dr. Nguyen is doing a fantastic job of helping everyone to understand how we can get involved, because I plan on advocating for the ACA because I am a recipient as well as my son. I lost my job a year ago, and I continued to stay a recipient after I was employed because the insurance on my job was so much expensive. And it gives me a good feeling, and not only that, my health is number one priority. If I can't be healthy, I can't work, I can't live. And the same with my son. He has to be healthy and strong so that he can learn and go to school. And then secondly, I also wanted to say that I do believe that it's all been partisan in reference to the ACA. For 8 years, the Republican establishment has not even talked about the benefits of the ACA, which are great, which help people like me. I'm a middle-class African-American woman with 3 college degrees, and it has been difficult for me to get a job back to where I was when I lost my original job. So I've just been working, but the insurance is very, very high, so I've had to reorganize my budget. ACA is great. It works for lots and lots of people. We have to keep it, and we have to send a message to Washington that we need this for us, and it's not just about Barack Obama. It's about the American people.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for your call, and God bless, and we'll keep our fingers crossed on your job search. But again, Lena Nguyen, another example of a person for whom the ACA has been literally a lifesaver.
I was speaking to Congressman Elijah Cummings a couple of days ago, and he said that the ACA to him is not about politics. It's about doing the right thing. And I'm here not to talk about the partisan issues and the partisan fights. I mean, that's not what I would want to deal with, but rather I want to talk about the health and life-saving aspects of it, that it really is about people's lives, and it is deeply, deeply personal to so many people, including Catherine and her family.
I want to talk to you about the youth health and wellness strategy that the health department is involved in, because, you know, health insurance and health and well-being is a combination of people being insured and also people having safety nets and having help when they need it outside of their insurance. So you've got 3 goals, particularly in regard to young people, kids as little as 6 or 7 and into their late teens. You want to reduce the number of kids that are victims of violence. You want to reduce teen births, and you want to reduce the number of school days that some of these children are missing. So, again, we've talked about this many times, and it's worth talking about as many more times, the holistic approach that you take to the health and well-being of the 620,000 residents of the city of Baltimore. How does the health department keep kids in school, keep them out of harm's way in terms of violence on the streets, and keep them from getting pregnant before it's appropriate?
I'm glad that you framed the question in terms of what is health and how health is foundational to everything else. We've talked before that if kids aren't healthy, then they're not going to be able to focus in school. Imagine if, think about the last time that you've had a splitting headache or abdominal pain. You're not able to focus on work, and it would be difficult to focus on school. And yet we have many children who have undiagnosed, untreated mental illness, who may have experienced deep trauma, and that may be part of what's preventing them from going to school or focusing on school. We launched a program called Vision for Baltimore for getting kids something as simple as a pair of glasses. I don't need another research study to tell me that if kids can't see, they can't read, and therefore can't be succeeding. When we handed out glasses, some of these kids were coming up to me saying that they thought it was normal that the blackboard
would be blurry.
Yes. Yeah, and so, and that was their sense of normalcy. Just like there are kids who tell us that they think it's normal for them to never go outside because, or except when it's absolutely necessary because it's so dangerous to be out. And it's a new sense of normalcy that we have to define.
And again, it's this catch-22 thing, because kids who aren't out there, if they're not active, I mean, physical activity is, of course, a thing that helps ward off depression and ward off mental illness and symptoms of mental illness. And it just keeps kids alive and happy and invigorated.
Absolutely. And then we have to talk about diet as well. But then it's not, you know, any type of behavioral change that we have is predicated on choice. So if I'm telling a parent who is coming to me with a child who's obese, and I'm telling the parent that they need to eat healthier and the child needs to eat healthier, what if they say that they have to take two buses and then walk 10 blocks in order to go to a grocery store? These are all the changes that have to occur. So with the Youth Health and Wellness Plan, it's part of our Healthy Baltimore 2020 strategy, our blueprint for health in the city, where we aim to cut disparities by half in the next 10 years. And we strongly believe that investing in our youth is the best investment that we can make, because the youth are our future. This is where our investment really will pay off. And actually, that's what's going to cut healthcare costs down the line, as well as make for a healthier and vibrant city.
Well, like in the instance of teen pregnancy, are there fewer young girls getting pregnant now than there were 5 years ago? And then are there ways that we can assure that fewer still will be pregnant 5 years from now and wait to get pregnant until the situation warrants it?
And this is why we talk about our Be More for Healthy Babies work and our youth health and wellness strategy as a life course approach. It cannot just be improving the care of our pregnant teens without also addressing the issue of reproductive health education and reproductive health services. We have to have education, but it's not enough just to have education. We also have to have the services available. Through the Be More for Healthy Babies work, we have also had a decrease in teen birth rates by over 36% in the last 6 years. And that's remarkable, because it's giving young women, young men, a chance to choose about when they will have their families and give them the best chance to pursue their education and succeed.
Well, Dr. Lena Nguyen, it's always a pleasure to see you. Thanksgiving's coming up next week, so have a great holiday. Will you be cooking or going, or how are you going to celebrate? I hope you're not going to be out at some bus station taking people's, you know, blood pressure. You take the day off, aren't you?
We are always working, but I do want to wish you also a happy Thanksgiving, and all of our listeners a happy Thanksgiving. Please have a healthy and well Thanksgiving, too.
There you go. Dr. Lena Nguyen, she is the City Health Commissioner here in Baltimore. She stops by regularly for our midday Health Watch shows. That's it for us today. Lunch was provided today by Dangerously Delicious Pies, with locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the square in Canton and at 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Their menu includes a large variety of homemade sweet and savory pies and quiches. Coming up on midday tomorrow, guest host Nathan Sterner talks with Yudhichit Bhattacharjee, the author of The Spy Who Couldn't Spell, an amazing and true story of modern espionage. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins midday producer Rob Civic. They'll size up the new rep stage production of American Hero. That's all coming up midday Thursday. Quick shout out to Linnell Smith. She is celebrating her 30th wedding anniversary today. She married a very goofy and dopey guy who I happen to know pretty well, and I know how glad he is that she did that. Congratulations and condolences. It's midday. Glad you've been with us. Have a great day.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.